This is Canon Explorer of Light, Lindsay Adler, and you're listening to the Petapixel Photography Podcast with Sharky James.
Welcome to the Petapixel Photography Podcast, Episode 7. Should sex offenders be allowed to photograph children? In this episode, a court of appeals makes a controversial ruling regarding sex offenders and the photographing of children. Instagram hits a new high. A very telling study on the state of news photography and its photographers. Red is set to release a new camera. Photix releases new flash triggers. All that and more in Episode 7 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. Thanks so much, Lindsay, for opening the show. And thank you, everyone, for joining us here in Episode 7 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. All right, with that, I'm your host, Sharky James. Let's hit it. This story is one for which I'm sure everyone will have an opinion. I can't see anyone sitting on the fence with this story, especially if you have children. And speaking of children, if they can hear this right now, you might want to send them out of the room or put on some headphones. On Tuesday, September 22nd, 2015, a state court of appeals in Wisconsin ruled that sex offenders have a First Amendment right to photograph children in public when it struck down a law that made it illegal for registered sex offenders to take photos of children in public without permission of their parents. Now, here in America, we've got the First Amendment right to take pictures of whoever we want in public. But I have a feeling that for most people, they're going to make an exception when it comes to sex offenders. But the court is saying that's not allowed. That's un-American, essentially. As we've talked about before, if you photograph children, you better be prepared to be scrutinized by parents, as well as members of the public, and at some point, you might have an uncomfortable conversation with police. When I was a staff news photographer, part of my job included photographing children, and that was without parental permission. When you're a member of the press and you live in a free society, that's just how things go. As photojournalists, if we had to get permission from people to put them in the newspaper, there'd be all of two people in every edition. Most people, they just don't want to be in the newspaper at all. And I'm thinking sex offenders, probably high on the list. But you know, now that I'm not in that line of work so much anymore, save for assignments by the big newspaper here in my area because I'm still on contract with them, I avoid photographing children when possible. It just makes me feel uncomfortable. There would have to be a compelling reason for me to do so, but that's just me. A lot of people, no problem with that at all. Well, Milwaukee, Wisconsin's Journal Sentinel newspaper reports that this case revolves around a 44-year-old Green Bay, Wisconsin man named Christopher J. Oatman, who was sentenced to 12 years in prison for photos of children. In 2002, he was convicted of child sexual assault and did his time. However, in February 2011, authorities searched his apartment and found a camera as well as cell phone containing photos of kids playing outside his apartment. Yeah, ick, right? The court said that while none of the photos contained nudity or obscenity, quote, most of the images tended to focus on the buttocks or crotch area of the children, end quote. Now, while unsettling and creepy, the court's opinion is that, quote, children are not harmed by non-obscene, non-pornographic photographs taken in public places, end quote. Now, I know a lot of people are shaking their heads in disgust right now with that, but this is what the court ruled. So the court overturned his conviction for those photos and ruled that he has the free speech right to photograph children and that laws to restrict free speech must protect a compelling state interest. They said, quote, while we may dislike the fact that someone might have objectionable thoughts when viewing ordinary images of children, the state is constitutionally prohibited from precluding citizens from creating such images, end quote. In a poll for this story on Petapixel.com, of the more than 800 respondents, 38% said that sex offenders should have the right to photograph children in public, with 62% saying they should not. Now, if you have an opinion on this, shoot us a voicemail and maybe we'll play it here on the podcast. Hit petapixel.com/podcast for our voicemail widget and weigh in. If you're a Canon user and into OCF, that's off-camera flash, you might want to have a look at the new Photix Lasso flash triggering system with support for Canon's RT radio flashes. The Lasso transmitter is able to control up to 15 Canon flashes arranged in up to 5 groups. Now, I think that aside from Sil Arena, no one else has 15 Canon flashes. If you do, I definitely want to hear from you because that's interesting. That's a good chunk of change right there in Canon flashes. And they might not all be 580 EX2s or 3s or whatever we're up to now, because those things are like $600 a piece. but I digress. The transmitter supports all the usual flash modes, including the highly sought-after high-speed sync. But don't forget, you're going to have flashes that have high-speed sync as part of their feature set. So don't forget to keep that in mind. Just because the transmitter will do high-speed sync doesn't mean your flashes are going to cooperate. They're not. They need to be able to do high-speed sync. And that's that H with that lightning bolt next to it on Canon flashes. As for receiving, the separate lasso receiver can be used for the majority of Canon flashes over the years which don't have radio technology in them, so that's cool. It can be controlled and triggered from not only the lasso transmitter, but Canon's official flashes and transmitters as well. Now, you can also use the receiver with studio lights, so if you want to mix in your hot shoe flashes with studio lighting, you can definitely do that with these. They're said to work up to 328 feet. How's that for specific, right? And they're available right now. The transmitter goes for $160 US with the receiver going for $100. Now, if you compare that to Canon's ST-E3RT at $260, quick math tells you that you can get a combination of transmitter and receiver from Fotix for the same price. So there's that. Super zooms are an awesome thing. Now, sure, they may not be the fastest class around, but on a budget, you could do some serious damage with one of these. Figuratively and literally. These things are heavy. Well, Bozeman, Montana photographer Tanner Johnson, who works for Bozeman Camera, recently reviewed the new Nikon 200-500mm f5.6e VR. Paired with a Nikon D3S, Johnson took it out for a spin on some wildlife photography and found that it was, in his opinion, surprisingly sharp wide open. He's used to hand-holding my favorite, the Sigma 120-300mm f2.8, and really enjoyed the fact that it's 7 pounds lighter. That thing is a beast. I can hand-hold the Sigma 120-300 2.8, but after a while, you're going to feel it. There's no doubt about it. I don't care how good a shape you're in. You're going to feel that after a while. Now, of course, at f5.6, that's two stops of light loss over the Sigma, so you're likely using this lens in daylight. Due to the lighter weight and image stabilization that's built in, what Nikon calls VR, aka vibration reduction, he was able to photograph a coworker in his store at 1/25th of a second. Not 1/125th, 1/25th of a second. And the eyelashes were tack sharp, he says. And if you look at the photos, they bear that out. As for focus speed, he found it to be decent, that's the word he used, but thought that the tripod collar to be not quite as smooth as he'd like. Sometimes they're a little bit sticky. Bozeman Camera has this lens in stock and it's available for rent as well. And of course, you can find it at all the usual online retailers where it goes for roughly $1,399.95. Okay, that's not exactly roughly, that's actually pretty specific, but you get what I'm saying here. If you're not protecting the LCD screens on your cameras, you're really taking a risk. I mean, we spend thousands of dollars on our camera bodies, right? And a small investment to protect the LCD screen might be worth it, I'm thinking. Now, many are going to protect the screen of their smartphone, but for some reason, not their cameras. And I've never understood that. Now, if you have a mirrorless camera, maybe this is not as critical since you can review your photos and adjust your settings right there in electronic viewfinder. So you can afford to have the back screens shattered. But I think it's a pretty good idea to protect it. For DSLR users, a little bit of screen protection goes a long way. Back in the day, I used to use those flexible plastic screen protectors called Invisible Shield from Zag. But now there are a myriad of glass products which are much better. Some of which are even optical glass. And that's what you want to look for. You want to look for something that's going to transmit most of the light and most of the clarity. You don't want to be messing up your screen for the sake of protecting it. So don't buy your screen protection, whether that's for your phone or for your camera, from your local convenience store. That's probably not the best quality. A company called Phantom Glass is in the game now with protection for Canon, Nikon, Sony, and Leica bodies. Each is made with Corning's Gorilla Glass technology, which makes it impervious to scratches and many other impacts which would otherwise damage your screen. It uses nano adhesion layer technology, and the company says it takes less than 30 seconds to install. Now, I take a little bit of issue with that. If you've ever installed one of these things similar to this on your phone, your tablet, or on one of your other cameras, you know that it takes a while to get all the smudges and everything off the screen, make sure there's no hairs floating around, and get that thing on there without a hair or dust particle underneath, because you don't want to be looking at that thing for months. That's a pro tip right there. That is going to save you a lot of trouble and a lot of frustration. Anyways, I digress. The company says it's 100% clear, resistant to fingerprints and residues, and you can pick one up now for about $26 US. Now, while we're on the subject, those cheap plastic protectors that Nikon has shipped with their camera bodies for years and years are useless. Now, of course, they're better than nothing. I would rather scratch one of those than scratch the actual screen. But drop 20, 25 bucks, whatever it is, to get a protector for your screen that is optically beautiful. The ones that Nikon gives are horrible. Those things scratch so darn easily, and then you can't see anything. I hate those things. So do yourself a favor, get a phantom glass, get a Zag glass, get something glass, and put it on your camera. It's really amazing how Instagram has taken off. For photographers, it's incredibly useful too. Post your best photos and people will notice. You will gain a following. And some photographers have massive followings on Instagram. Some of them have built entire businesses around their followings on Instagram. So it should be no surprise that the Facebook-owned service has hit 400 million users. And that's up 100 million in just the past 10 months alone. That is amazing. The jump from 200 million to 300 million also took 10 months, so they're growing at quite a clip. And in case you're wondering, Twitter has 316 million users, Pinterest has over 100 million, and Flickr is holding steady at about 112 million. So 400 million users for Instagram, that's a lot of people. And if you're not on it, you might want to check it out. So that would be 400 million and one. What's really interesting is that a full 75% of Instagram users are outside the United States. And of the last 100 million registrations, over 50% are from Europe and Asia. Over the last 10 months, though, the biggest growth has come from Brazil, Japan, and Indonesia. An amazing 80 million photos are uploaded to the service every day, and that translates to 926 photos per second. And yes, there's no way you're ever going to see them all. Most of them aren't even worth looking at, I think. But if you're a photographer and you're not on Instagram yet, you might want to check it out, because your competition probably is. We've reported on the full-frame Pentax body that Ricoh has been teasing for what seems like forever now. But now we know that they have a 24-70mm f2.8 lens slated for this upcoming body. They are clearly playing the win here. So many camera makers take their sweet time getting to f2.8 zooms. Sony, cough, cough, right? So it's encouraging that Ricoh is looking to come out strong with a classic lens that many photographers desire here. The HD Pentax D FA 24-70 f2.8 ED DSW WR, which seemingly has the longest string of cryptic letters I've ever seen, is weather resistant, has a supersonic direct drive autofocus motor for quick and quiet AF, and all the other fun stuff, and will be available in October 2015 for about $1,300 US. But remember, you're going to be waiting until spring 2016 for the full frame body to pair that with. Hey, Ricoh has discovered the full frame DSLR market now. I love this quote from Ricoh America President Jim Malcolm. He says, quote, "We've built our new 24-70mm lens to meet the rigorous demands of pro photographers for speed, sharpness, and performance," end quote. Now, I find that interesting. Honestly, and I'm not trying to poo-poo what they're doing here, I know about as many pro photographers interested in a Pentax DSLR these days as I do who own Canon or Nikon's mirrorless systems. Yeah. That's like next to nobody. DSLR sales are down a reported 16%, and mirrorless sales are about up the same amount. So it'll be interesting to see just how this shakes out for Ricoh. Will they do well with a full-frame DSLR camera like this? I don't know. I guess we'll see, right? What I'm wondering is if they're ever going to compete in the mirrorless market. I think now is the time to get in, not years after everyone has locked themselves into a system. They have mirrorless cameras, but like Canon and Nikon, most people don't know that. Or if they do discover them, they quickly shrug them off as they realize they come nowhere near the mirrorless offerings of Sony, Olympus, and Panasonic. And that's a problem for them. So we'll see. You know, competition is always a good thing. If you're a serious filmmaker and you've got about $6,000 in the budget, you might want to have a look at the upcoming product from Red called Raven. Available in Canon EF mount, it brings 4K video recording to the masses with an integrated microphone, Wi-Fi, Red's Dragon sensor, and it'll shoot 4K video up to 120 frames per second. It'll also shoot the company's Redcode compressed RAW and will do 5:1 compression at 24 frames a second. That's pretty cool. And if you're a serious filmmaker, these specs are very appealing at this price point. Company president Jared Land says, quote, "The Raven doesn't replace the Scarlett. It's a new category in our lineup. Raven is a younger, hungrier, more spirited member of the Red family with a bit of a chip on its shoulder, ready to take on the entire sub-10K market with images you'll be incredibly proud of. End quote. I think that Red has felt the pressure as DSLRs and mirrorless bodies have improved when it comes to video. They've stepped up their game, and for many, and I'm doing air quotes now, they're good enough. But if you're serious about your videography, you own a bunch of Canon glass, and you've really been wanting a Red, now you're going to have an option that's extremely appealing to you. The Brain only will go for $5,950 US with a ready-to-shoot package for less than $10,000. The official announcement for Raven seems to be coming any day now, given the leaks, so stay tuned. You know what really sucks? The Fujin Mark II vacuum lens. But that's a good thing. I should probably explain that. As we reported on Petapixel.com back in August 2014, the Fujin is a pretty cool item which would be a great gift for the photographer who has it all. Looking like a Canon prime lens, the Fujin Mark II is actually a vacuum cleaner designed to suck the dust and other particulate matter from the inside of your DSLR. Its high-speed electronic fan produces 2.7 times more airflow than the first generation of this product, changing the air inside your camera every 6 seconds. It's powered by four AAA batteries, and the Canon version can be had right now for $150 US. You know, that's a lot of money. This thing better work for $150. And for that amount of money, you get one of these units, a lens pouch, and a pack of three filters. In case you're wondering, a Nikon version is in the works, and it'll be available on October 28th, 2015. Imagine seeing one of these in your camera bag, thinking you packed that awesome Canon 50mm 1.2 for an important shoot, but it's one of these instead. Now that would suck. Okay, let's just move on and pretend that didn't happen. As many of you know, my career in photography was as a photojournalist. I was a newspaper photographer for many years in Arizona, and I'm still on contract with the big paper up here in Utah. So when the University of Stirling in the UK teamed up with the University of Oxford's Reuters Institute for the Study of Journalism and World Press Photo to conduct a study of some 1,556 news photographers across 100 countries with a 63-question survey, this is something that got my attention. Now, you don't have to be a newspaper photographer, I think, to find this survey interesting, because this is a sign of the times that we live in here. And it's a reflection of photography as a whole, I think. I don't think it's going to shock anyone to learn that 85% of news photographers are male. Now, if you've ever run into a newspaper photographer out and about, chances are it's a guy. There are very few women out there that are doing this job, and I'm not sure why that is. There's a healthy percentage of wedding and portrait photographers out there who are women, but for some reason, they're not attracted to photojournalism, and I'm not sure why. Now, this survey found that 60% of those polled were self-employed and just 75% of them were working full-time. Times have surely changed. Newspapers and magazines are relying more and more on freelancers. It saves them a lot of money not having to pay for a full-time photographer on their payroll. A little over 2 years ago, I left a perfectly good job as a photojournalist down in Arizona to move up here to Utah. I got married, have kids, the whole deal. And they still haven't replaced me. They just often choose to take the savings and they push everything else off on the reporters. So I feel badly for those reporters. A little bit. Most of them. Now, this next one didn't surprise me at all. 80% said they work alone. And that's mostly a given as newspaper photographers, or news photographers as they're classifying it here, are usually on assignment separate from a reporter. And frankly, we prefer it that way. We just do. We like doing the job by ourselves. We don't want anybody tagging along. It isn't like you see in the old episodes of Superman, where Jimmy Olsen and Lois Lane are traveling together to cover assignments. It's rarely like that. A tiny, tiny percentage of the thousands of assignments that I've shot across the years were shot with a reporter with me. And let me let you in on a little secret. Jimmy Olsen wanted to ditch Lois. Trust me on this. She was his Yoko. Now, when it comes to video, ask any news photographer if they enjoy shooting it, and most will tell you they'd prefer not to. Now, don't get me wrong, they've gotten quite good at it, but video is such a different beast than stills. It's a whole different way of thinking. And when something happens, do you choose to shoot stills or are you shooting video? When I was at my last newspaper, I had a think tank photo pouch dedicated to a small Canon Vixia camcorder, complete with wireless audio packs and a stick mic hanging off my belt system. It was quite the sight. But a setup like that was a lot more functional for me than shooting DSLR video. So when the study asked, 54% said that they concentrate on stills, and a massive 93% said that given the choice, they'd prefer to do stills only. That doesn't surprise me at all. many of these guys, they're mostly guys, right? Won't say it out loud, but very few are excited about doing video. The younger newspaper photographers have grown up with it, and that's just part of the job to them. But for those of us who came up with film and then digital, not excited at all about shooting video as part of the job. It's just a fact. And this study definitely bears that out, loud and clear. Now, when it comes to money, everyone seems to assume that with all the expensive gear that's hanging off of us and the privileged assignments that we get to shoot, that news photographers must make a ton of money. And I think most people listening to this know better than that, but the general public, that's what they think. According to the study, 3/4 of those news photographers make less than $40,000 per year, with 1/3 making about $10,000 or less. Now, I can tell you from personal experience, you're not getting rich as a news photographer. So anyone who goes into it thinking they're going to make a lot of money, you might as well just work at McDonald's. You probably make more money there. You do it because you love the work and the skills that it takes to operate at a level that would surprise most people. You can either get the shot or you can't. And as a news photographer, you've got to get the shot. You have to nail it every single darn time. And the personal satisfaction that you get as a news photographer is off the charts. But it's hard to save for retirement. When it came to copyright issues, many of the photographers reported having their photos used without compensation. That's unfortunately not a surprise either. A whopping 90% reported feeling, quote, vulnerable to the threat of physical risk or injury at some point during their normal duties, end quote. Now, of course, you'd expect this to be a problem when working in war zones, impoverished areas where crime is high, etc. But the job of a news photographer is consistently listed as one of the most dangerous jobs in general. Now, personally, over the years, I've gotten swung at, I've been stalked while doing my job when someone was looking to rob me, and at times, I felt like I was in a bit of danger. Now think about that for a second. You've got thousands of dollars of gear on you. You're often distracted as you've got your eye to the viewfinder, and that makes for an easy target. So you learn to walk out of events with groups of people rather than alone. And if you want to keep your gear, that's something you have to do, especially if you paid for it yourself and you don't have it insured. In some cases, you lose your gear, you lose your job. All right, now we're getting into the dark arts, as it were. The survey reports that, quote, there is an industry consensus that rejects the manipulation of photographs by adding or removing content, and 76% of photographers regard manipulation as a serious problem. Of those who identified as mainly news photographers or photojournalists, 75% said they never alter a picture, with the remaining 25% saying they alter the content of images other than by cropping at least sometimes, end quote. So a full 25% are altering what's being presented to the public as reality, and that's just not cool. In my opinion, they just need to learn how to shoot properly. And there's no reason to alter a photo anyhow. You're not going to win a Pulitzer Prize for it. You're just not. You shoot it, you submit it, it runs, and it's gone. You may never see that photo again, so why risk your job like that? It's just not necessary. Now, 52% report staging photos sometimes, with 36% saying never and 12% saying they do so at least half the time. All right, so if it's a check presentation, no big deal. That's a given. But if you're shooting news and telling people to hold, let's say, a protest sign, to move into a certain location so you can get a candidate in the background, etc., that's going a little bit too far, in my opinion. Now, 51% said they enhance their photos while 10% never do. And that's no biggie. In the film days, you were allowed to dodge, burn, etc. As long as you're not doing anything crazy, you're removing dust spots, you're lightening up a photo, you're changing the color balance to make it accurate, you're good to go. Now, most said that they were okay with the rise of so-called citizen photojournalism and didn't feel threatened by it. You know, citizens haven't replaced photojournalists yet, and it's not going to happen anytime soon. You just can't count on the public to take photos and be there and get what you need, and especially to get accurate information for your cut lines, you know, the captions under the photos. But many newspapers are sending reporters out with cameras, and I think that's where the concern should be, you know, two birds, right? Now, here's the bottom line. Job happiness. 66% said that they're happy with the career they've chosen. So that means that 34% are not. I don't know how that compares to other careers, but 2/3 are happy. That seems pretty decent. Those of us who've been in the news business, we know that 34% that are unhappy news photographers. They look like death with a camera. They're just waiting to be put out of their misery. You know, I joke, but it's pretty sad. I actually think it's the guys who hate shooting video. Those are the guys that seem the most unhappy. The report says, quote, "These are clearly uncertain times for photography and its future. And our intention is to repeat the survey study in the future to evaluate evidence of change over time," end quote. As we've said before, something like half of all photojournalism jobs have been cut since the year 2000. That is just amazing. When I talk to young photojournalism students, I really have mixed feelings. I was them once. They have a passion for the work and great intentions, but I wonder if they know about the current realities of the job. If they ask me, I'm going to be honest with them, but I don't want to kill their spirit. Now, this study, I don't think it necessarily does that, but I wonder. All right, today's listener question comes from Marvin, who recorded his question via our voicemail widget.
Hi, Sharky. It's Marvin, and I'm calling from New Mexico. So I have a bachelor's degree in photography and 6 to 8 years of solid studio experience, plus a couple years experience running my own real estate photography business. But about 2 years ago, I did exit the industry completely due to some life challenges. So my question is, since my skills are stale and I haven't been actively participating in photography, what is a good way to make myself viable and attractive so that I can enter the industry again, at least in the eyes of an employer?
Hey, Marvin, thank you so much for your question. I really appreciate it. Finding a job at a studio is getting increasingly difficult, so you may want to consider whether or not you even want to get back into the industry because it is rough out there. But assuming that photography is your passion and you want back in and you want to work in a studio setting, I think the best thing you can do by far is to do good work. You need to work on your portfolio, gather your family and friends, shoot photos of them, show that you can do current styles, classic photography, lighting, and show that you can get the job done. You've got a wealth of experience from the past, and that doesn't go away. You just need to bone up on your skills a little bit and do good work and show that in your portfolio. Now, I think that these days, it doesn't hurt at all to have a strong social media following. So you want to make sure you have a Facebook page, Instagram account, Twitter, etc., and start building that and try to build it as large as you can and show that you are connected with how things are working out these days. When it comes to Twitter and Instagram, there's a great app out there called Crowdfire for helping to build your social media following in a smart way. This isn't buying followers. This isn't anything underhanded. This isn't gray hat or black hat stuff. You'll basically target keywords or the followers of others in your area that do what you want to do. And there's nothing wrong with that. People can be fans of multiple photographers. Now, you didn't give me too many specifics, so I don't know exactly what type of job you're going for, but I'm just going to assume studio photography since you mentioned that. But this will apply to any type of employer out there who's looking to hire photographers, but you might want to consider going it alone. And you don't even need a formal studio anymore. You can do that out of your home. We're starting to head into winter here in America, of course. So depending on where you live, the outdoor photography studio might not exactly work out for you. But consider strongly whether or not you want to get back into the industry. It is tough out there to make a living in photography. But if you're really good and you show your best work and you get people to follow you on social media, to like and share your photos, and make it known that you're out there in the community and available, you could make a living at it. But it's going to take a lot of hustle. It's not like it was back in the old days. You're competing with everyone, so you really, really got to hustle. Thank you so much for your question, Marvin. I really appreciate it, and I hope that helped you out. If you, too, would like to have your question answered here on the podcast, hit petapixel.com/podcast and look for our voicemail widget. And you can even mention your photography business and get some love. Like I say, ask me a question, get some love. Easy as that. I'd like to thank you all for listening to episode 7 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. Don't forget to check us out at petapixel.com/podcast for the show notes and to see what else we have for you. If you've got a minute, head on over to iTunes or wherever else you listen to us, rate, review, and subscribe. We'd greatly appreciate it. If you'd like to connect with me personally, hit me up on Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook where I'm at LensShark, LensSharK. All right, with that, I'll see you all in episode 8. Well, it's f8 2/50 of a second outside. It's time to shoot.
Please subscribe to the Petapixel Photography Podcast. My daddy is the host.